This is Childhood Matters, presented by Interactive Parenting Media.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids.
We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing.
Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Good morning and welcome to Childhood Matters. Today is Nurse Rona's book club show. Although the title of the book is Cinderella Ate My Daughter, I suggest parents of boys also stay tuned since we're talking about the commercialization of children, the influence of the media, and the encouragement of some parents to have children look a certain way, play a certain way, and identify with the social norms of what it means to be a girl or a boy. And although your boy may not be obsessed with the Disney princesses, he will be in the classrooms with the girls who are. And boys have their own pressures when it comes to playing a certain way with their lightsabers or trains. We'll discuss princesses, pageants, and also concerns about early sexualization of girls and how that's different than normal sexuality. Author Peggy Orenstein visited places like Disneyland, toy fairs, the American Girl Place, and the Pottery Barn Kids, as well as spending time at beauty pageants for preschoolers. She also delves into original fairy tales and how they've been changed over time. When we're willing to open our eyes and grapple with the complex issues facing us in this girly girl culture, we can be more effective in guiding our children and helping them have a childhood where they can play, create, use their imaginations, and enjoy their true nature. I'm Nurse Rona, and I'm here each week to present important topics to parents, grandparents, foster parents, childcare providers, big sisters, big brothers, or anyone who cares for and about children. If you want to be part of the conversation today, call us 877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. You can also email us at info@childhoodmatters.org. Joining us in the studio is Peggy Orenstein. She's author most recently of the New York Times bestseller Cinderella Ate My Daughter, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the New Girly Girl Culture. Some of her previous books include Waiting for Daisy, Schoolgirls, Young Women, Self-Esteem and the Confidence Gap, Flux, Women on Sex, Work, Love, Kids, and Life in a Half-Changed World. And a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine, Peggy has also written for such publications as the Los Angeles Times, Vogue, Mother Jones, Oh, the Oprah Magazine, and the New Yorker. And she contributes commentaries to NPR's All Things Considered. Peggy lives in the Bay Area with her husband, who's an award-winning filmmaker, Stephen Okazaki, and their daughter, Daisy. Peggy Orenstein, it's a pleasure to have you in studio with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I know it's early in the morning, but I know you can start right away telling us about why you were compelled to write this book at this time.
Yeah, sure. I just want to say, though, I loved that introduction. I loved when you said that when we're willing to open our eyes and engage, that we can parent more effectively and combat this, that that's step one. Because that, I mean, that was a beautiful way to say that. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to say that when I read your book, all of a sudden I walked outside and I saw things differently.
That's great.
And I think of myself as a pretty aware person. Yeah. But just reading your book made like another layer of that onion peel.
Oh, great. Oh, thank you very much. Well, anyway, so you asked why I wrote it. Well, that would be why. But I started on this because, you know, I'm a mom and I have a daughter who's now 7.5. And when you have that little girl, you know, when she's a baby, you think, I don't want her to feel there's anything that she, you know, that she can't do because she's a girl. I don't want her to feel there's anything she has to do because she's a girl. And I was going along raising my little girl that way, and then she went to preschool. And, you know, within like a week, she came home having memorized all the gown colors and names of the Disney princesses. And I thought, what the heck's a Disney princess? I'd never heard of this concept before, right? And so, you know, meanwhile, we're going around town, and I live in Berkeley, and we, you know, the pierced and tattooed waitress at the breakfast joint we go to was giving her pancakes and saying, here's your princess meal, honey. And the nice lady at CVS was asked her if she wanted a balloon and gave her a pink one without asking and said, you know, I know what color you want. And finally we went to the dentist, and the dentist said, would you like to get on my princess throne so I can sparkle your teeth? And I just thought, oh my gosh, you know, do you have a princess drill? You know, I mean, I just thought, I did not remember.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly wore my mom's cast-off tiara now and again and wrapped myself in a tablecloth and flounced around the house.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember being expected to be, for 3 solid years of my life, a princess. I just didn't recall this.
And I, you know, I have grown kids, you know, who are in 40 and under. And I was thinking back to my daughters, and I realized that the tutu and the tiara were all part of a dress-up box that had clowns and it had firemen and it had, you know, old clothes. It wasn't the thing. It was just part of what's possible.
It was part of imaginary play. So I wondered why this had happened and what it meant, and whether this was something that was, you know, protective against early sexualization or priming girls for it, what it was doing to their imaginations, all these different things. So I found out that with the princesses themselves, that that did start in 2000. With Disney. And, you know, before that, of course, there were, I mean, I can hear everybody going, but what about those movies? You know, those movies existed, but they would come out, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, whatever. They'd come out for a few weeks, be in the theaters or be available on VHS. There'd be a little bit of merchandise, maybe a costume. And then they would go back in the vault. That's how Disney put it. And they wouldn't come out again for 7 years.
That's right.
And there would not be anything related to those movies for 7 years till the new crop of children came up. And then there was this guy who came into Disney around 2000 who was the new head of consumer products licensing. And he went to an ice show and he saw all these little girls dressed as princesses. And Rona, they were using their imaginations.
They were wearing things that weren't
licensed.
Cookie cutter licensed princess outfit.
Yeah, I mean, and just right there, the fact that they thought that it was a terrible thing that little girls were using their imaginations, I think, is really telling.
And that's where he had his aha
moment.
That's
where he had his epiphany. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, this is a huge marketing possibility for us that we're missing. So he went back and he created this thing called the Disney Princess line. And it was, they took, you know, a bunch of their characters, I think there's 8 of them, from the movies. And it was the first time they marketed them separately from a film's release and put them out there 24/7, 365 days a year. So made them into a product.
Phenomenon.
Yeah, a products generator, an income generator through products rather than the movies and the stories. And the first year they pulled in $300 million. And by 2009, it was a $4 billion industry. So as Disney goes, of course, so goes childhood. And that's why you see princess on everything from, you know, the toothbrush to the T-shirt to everything.
Right. And I think this is the key we want to talk about. There are many aspects to this, so many aspects. And your book brings out so many things. But for us to stop and really look at the commercialization and how our children are getting these messages, some ways are obvious and some aren't. Like when they're born, you know, what do they get in the hospital
right
away? And how are parents signed up for something that's related to Disney right away?
Right.
It's very complex, and I think the book really points to how hard it is then for parents to have their values be the ones that their daughter has when they're now out in this world early.
Right, and I'm really clear in the book. You know, I'm like, I'm not a tiger mother. I'm a dog on 4 roller skates kind of a mother. You know, I mean, I'm in the book, and I'm trying to raise my own daughter, and I'm in the soup, and it's hard. I mean, I'm as contradictory and inconsistent and hypocritical as any parent because, what you know, that's what it means to be a parent.
That's what I loved about the book, too, the honesty on your part, and I could really relate to that. You know, we have our values, and then we get flexible, and then we give up, and then we get worn down.
Yeah.
And it is complex.
That's a really good way of putting
it. Yeah, yeah. So I'd love to open up the phone lines now. We gave out the book to some parents. I want to invite people either who read the book or who didn't read the book to call in with questions this morning, 1-877-372-KIDS. And we'll get into this right away with Inga, and she's calling actually from New Jersey. Good morning, Inga.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity to join you guys, and especially to be able to read this book. It was really interesting.
How old are your children?
I have a son who's 5 and a half and a daughter who's 2 and a half.
So what did you find interesting about the book?
Well, I think the book really just brought up a lot of thoughts, made me reflect a lot on my own childhood and kind of some of the things that my parents did intentionally in raising 3 girls and really kind of wanting to make sure that we all became, you know, independent, strong young women, and then kind of made me think a lot about, you know, what does it mean now in just how much, you know, I don't think, like you were talking about, how much commercialism there is over, you know, how many things there are that are pink in the store and the princesses and everything, definitely made me kind of a little bit terrified, I think, about Mary, about having a 2.5-year-old to be raising today. But at the same time, it kind of went back and forth between being really scared and then like, well, my parents did it and we all turned out really well. So I think that I could do it too.
Yes. And Inga, you had a question also?
Yeah, well, I think the question that I had was just kind of, you know, after reading this book and, you know, thinking about it, is kind of now that my daughter is, you know, starting to, she's the age where we're going to play groups and we're going to be doing preschool soon, kind of how can you broach this subject with people that you don't know very well? Because I feel comfortable talking about it with all the moms who I grew up with, but I'm in a new community that we just moved into now, and I've already noticed, you know, I go to a playgroup, and for St. Patrick's Day, there are crowns for the girls. They're green crowns, but they're still princess crowns, and I'm kind of like, okay, so, but I don't want to talk about it in a way that kind of, you know, might, you know, cause a big divide.
Mm-hmm. Right, because here you are in a new community, so you're also, it's on the same level that you're trying to fit in too in some way, but hold your values. And I think, Peggy, this is a great question for you because it was something I was going to ask you, you know, like, how do you also navigate your values and still be able to talk to parents right. who you don't know so well about all this?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, that was really the challenge of actually writing the book, not just in talking to other parents, but in trying to think through how I wanted to write this. Because, you know, what it really is about, and I sort of didn't get into this for people who haven't read it, but is the ways that girls are encouraged to define themselves at ever earlier ages, at unprecedentedly early ages, through appearance and then and play sexiness, and how that affects them, and how that that message changes and transforms from the sort of seemingly pink innocence of the princess to a sort of more diva princess to a sort of more overtly sexualized image, and how this puts little girls on this trajectory that is hard to see right away because it's so cute, you know, when they're little. It's so darned cute.
Right.
And you have to sort of look beyond the cute and see what that means. And so when I was writing the book, it was really a struggle for me. The biggest struggle in writing this book was finding the tone and finding a way to talk to people that didn't sound alarmist, didn't sound hectoring, sounded, you know, like I was a peer and a friend. And so, you know, one thing, I don't mean this at all to self-promote, but I really think it's true, because what I wanted to do was start this conversation, would be to say, you know, hey, you know, I'm reading this book. Have you, you know, and talk about it that way. That's really
like,
non-threatening.
What do you, so Inga, if you said, you know, I'm reading this book, what do you think?
Yeah.
I think also, Inga, it's like you could model, you know, I think it's like modeling without getting angry.
Yeah.
And, you know, your daughter puts on the little, you know, tiara.
Yeah.
But you don't make a big deal of it.
Yes.
I think that's part of the key, is if you watch parents and hear what they say, sometimes what's reinforcing all this is the parents going on, look how cute
yes.
you look. Aren't you adorable? Let me see. Let's take a picture for grandma. And so I think you could do a lot just by modeling your responses.
Mm-hmm.
Inga, do you think that some of the people you're meeting would be interested in this subject to talk about it? Some of the other women, some of the other mothers?
I think so. I mean, like I said, it's such a new community. I've definitely met one mom who's already mentioned that she really tries not to have gender-specific toys for her kids and stuff. And so with her, I think that'd be the first person I could say, like, oh, I just read this book. I think you'd find it fascinating.
Yeah.
But the other moms are just so new that I just kind of don't know where they're coming from, you know.
Well, take it.
Give it a minute.
Yeah. Give it a minute. Sure. Don't jump in there with it. I did go to Peggy's website. I want to say that peggyornstein.com, is
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Or you can be CinderellaAteMyDaughter.com. Either one gets you there.
But I found there were really good articles there, and there were very good resources. There was a whole page of resources, of books to read with kids
yeah.
that you know, might make you feel more comfortable. So I think just keep it in the back of your mind and move from that place of some understanding and some support.
Yeah, you always have to sort of think of it compassionately and with support. And I just wanted to say, can I say something about the gender-neutral toy thing?
Yeah.
I mean, that's great. It's important for both boys and girls to have sort of those neutral toys. But little girls, when they're from, and boys too, but we're talking about girls right now, in that preschool age, they really have this developmental need to assert that they're girls as strongly as the culture will allow them to do that, and with whatever extreme tools the culture will allow them to do that. And that's why the princess thing became such a phenomenon, because it fits in with that developmental need. So when I was a little girl, it was like baby buggies and dollhouses and, right, you know, baby dolls. Now it's spa birthday parties and makeup and pink, right? So the gender-neutral toys don't scratch that itch. So one of the things I did on that resources page that Rona was kind enough to mention is talk about ways that you can help your daughter celebrate her femininity that and not link it perpetually and constantly to appearance and attitude and princessness.
That's really important. And I think there's a developmental piece that we don't want to leave out in all of this. Thank you for that. And thanks so much, Inga.
Oh, thank you, and thanks for putting this out there. I look forward to talking to the other moms that I know who have little girls, so
good,
we'll all figure it out together.
And join us on Facebook and tell your friends so you can find out the shows that are coming up. Let's take another call. We also have someone else from New Jersey. We have Virginie in, with us this morning. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
So I'm just trying to find out, how did you all find us from New Jersey? I love it.
I'm listening to a podcast.
Great.
On iTunes.
Good, from like a podcast. So what's your question this morning?
My question is, what I really don't like about the princess culture is that the princess is always waiting for the prince to make it all better.
Yes.
It's always like a wait, and I don't want my daughter to wait. I want my daughter to be happy and take charge of her life, and then she'll find a prince, you know, or a husband, most likely, because there's no princes. So, and then this, the whole thing is then, it's like you have to wait to find a prince, and then there's all that consumerism that goes with it. You have to buy the makeup, you have to buy the clothes, you have to buy, because if you don't do that, then you're not going to find your prince.
Yes, and it starts so young.
It's just like the wrong message for all the girls.
I agree with you, and it starts so young. How old is your daughter?
She's 3.
She's 3. And did this book help you think about how you might be of support to her and in being in touch with her, you know, nature and who she is? Did you get some ideas from it?
I thought it was really interesting to see that it was a developmental need that they needed to assert themselves as a female, but also, like, how do we try to not make it so they just get into that trap?
Good. Uh-huh. Let's ask Peggy about that.
Yeah, so it's not about narcissism and materialism, because that's what this sort of leads into. You know, that was one of the conclusions that I drew, was that this sort of innocence and prettiness of the little girl princess is very quickly turned into something that's about narcissism and materialism and makeup and sexualization. So,
and also what she's saying about I need a prince.
Yeah, although, you know, it's interesting because I was about to say that I feel like that's less of the fantasy for little girls right now, and it's more about the bling. But I just saw this piece on the Today Show about what are called Harry Hunters, the young women who go from America to England specifically to try to meet Prince Harry. They're like stalking the one prince that's left, trying to marry him. And I thought, oh my God, are they kidding? But they seem to be deadly serious. They like did research and everything.
But I think Virginia's saying something important, because I remember thinking that there was going to be a man who was going to be the one to take care of me.
Yeah, and one of the links I make is to Twilight, to girls' obsession with Twilight later on. I think it is about, you know, you can't extinguish all of these things entirely, because the industry is just too big at this point, but to try to limit what you can and also give alternatives. So, you know, everything, like I said in my resources, little things, like my daughter, we got into, when she was about 4, we started getting into child-friendly Greek myths, and she got very into the idea of Athena, who's the goddess of war and wisdom, and she went to Halloween, she went trick-or-treating as Athena, and that was such a different image. I mean, it's clearly a very feminine archetype. It's clearly really grounded in being a woman and being female, but how different is the meaning of that image than Disney's Cinderella?
That's right.
And that was just a way to just shift it so that she still got to wear the cool costume. She still got to wear the little thing on her head, you know. So she felt like really, you know, like she got to transform and do all of that. But what she was arcing towards was entirely different.
And then you could read the stories and introduce the ideas of myths. Virginia, I'm so glad you joined us. Love to hear from you on Facebook as well or on our website. Thank you so much for your insight and question. We're talking with Peggy Ornstein, and in a moment, we'll take your call.
Get involved.
Call now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
You're listening to Childhood Matters.
More with Rona Renner after this.
Here's this week's Childhood Matters community calendar with events for parents and kids. The Olmec have finally arrived to the Bay Area at the D. Young Museum in San Francisco. See the exhibition for free every Friday until May 6, 5 to 8:45. For more information, call 415-750-3600. That's 415-750-3600. Catch a glimpse of the Islamic world at the Arts Habitat in Monterey. The Faces of Islam photography exhibit will be held on Tuesday, March 29, 7 to 9. For more information, call 831-624-6111. That's 831-624-6111. Check out Toddler Storytime with your little one at the Milpitas Library, Wednesday, March 30, starting at 10:30 a.m. For more information, call 408-262-1171. That's 408-262-1171. Looking to become a U.S. citizen? Well, the San Lorenzo branch of the Alameda County Library will be holding free citizenship classes Monday, March 28, 6 to 8. For more information, call 510-670-6283. That's 510-670-6283. Enjoy a first free Friday at the Museum of Art and History McPherson Center in Santa Cruz. For more information, call 831-429-1964. That's 831-429-1964. Come out and join the community at the first annual Cesar Chavez Community Garden Day in Richmond, Saturday, April 2nd, 12 to 3. For more information on this event, call 510-232-4004. That's 510-232-4004. Take advantage of yet another museum's free day, this time at Curiosity in San Mateo, Sunday, April 3rd, open to close. For more information, call 650-342-7755. That's 650-342-7755. For additional information on events, call 510-663-5437, and to submit information, email info@childhoodmatters.org. I'm Lorenzo Plazola.
I'm looking forward to our upcoming Childhood Matters show on teaching children about money, saving, spending, and sharing. Something I know you're also interested in, Dr. Manaso.
Sí, Nurse Rona, muchas familias que escuchan nuestros niños quieren aprender más sobre cómo enseñar a los niños a ahorrar, gastar y compartir el dinero.
Guests from Bank of the West will join us to answer questions so that we can all learn how to better manage money in the challenging times we're living in.
Así es, confiamos en nuestros invitados de Bank of the West para responder las preguntas que tenga nuestra audiencia, pues en estos tiempos a todos nos viene bien aprender a manejar mejor el dinero.
So on Sunday, April 3rd, we'll learn about Money Matters on Childhood Matters, values and skills for the entire family.
Mejoremos nuestro manejo del dinero escuchando a nuestros niños el domingo 3 de abril a las 8 de la mañana en esta estación.
Si se puede, yes we can.
My darling, be home soon. It's not just these few hours, but I've been waiting since I traveled for the great relief of having you to talk to.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
Today we're talking with Peggy Orenstein, author of many books, most recently the New York Times bestseller Cinderella Ate My Daughter, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the New Girly Girl Culture. You know, today is Nurse Rona's book club, so if you go to our website, you'll see under the word bookshelf some of our other book club shows. We send out copies to some of our listeners ahead of time so they could read the books and join us on the air. We also welcome calls from people who didn't read the book but are interested in this subject. I'd love to hear some observations from fathers, if you're out there raising daughters. And if you have a book that you think we should cover that would benefit other parents, send me an email at rona@childhoodmatters.org, or you can tell us also on Facebook. We have another call. We have Avis with us from Oakland. Good morning.
Good morning, Rona. Thanks very much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
And good morning, Peggy.
Hi.
I have first a quick observation and then a question. First of all, because we're both working parents and awfully busy, we don't head to Target too much. And someone gave us the Princess books recently. It seems that Disney has marketed them, I guess, to the more cerebral crowd to try and make them look like they're not just the Disney Princess stories, and they've titled them The Story of Hope, A Story of Love. But they're all just the movies turned into some really poorly written children's books.
I know, right?
That the result was my daughter immediately said, oh, well, she can be a princess if she marries a prince, kind of following up on the previous caller. So,
yeah, Avis, have you read Peggy's book?
I have not. So
oh, good. We have an extra copy here. We'll be glad to send it to you. Do you know those books that she's talking about?
Oh, my gosh, there's so many. I mean, there's 26,000 Disney Princess Brides. It's really hard to keep up, but yeah, I mean, I mentioned my Disney Princess Wedding and some of the other ones. I have to say that one part that there's the whole piece about sexualization, and I hope that we can talk about that and the difference between sexuality and sexualization. But there's also this piece of colonizing children's imaginations that really bothers me, and this is true for boys and girls in this culture, you know, and giving them this garbagey stuff to, you know, these garbagey books and these garbagey straight to DVD movies and things. And I object just on that level too. I mean, I don't want those books in my house because I think they're, in addition to the kind of messages about girls, they're poorly written, they're badly drawn, and they're bad for kids' brain and imagination. So I feel like this huge part, I didn't realize when I had a child, and I don't know, I'm sure a lot of you out there feel this way, but I didn't realize how big a part of my job as a parent in this generation was to protect my child's childhood and to protect her imagination from basically becoming a land grab for marketing.
That's right. And that's where you have to watch what they see on the computer at a young age,
and
especially.
Not just because, I mean, the message is yes, and that's, you know, I'm all about that, but
the
also
quality.
Just the quality and developing their creativity and their imaginations. It just seems like everything is, you know, contrary to that. And I think what you're talking about, bringing up the quality of these books in addition to everything else, yes, is really relevant.
Avis, do you have a sense of the books that you really value for your children? How old is your child?
My older child is just about 3.5.
Yeah.
And I guess books, some recommended books would maybe fall into my question, which is she's just now actually started really getting into, she wants to wear a twirly skirt every day,
right,
because she loves to have dance parties. And when she puts on a fancy dress, she might ask for a crown.
Right.
Which we'll try and make at home and cover stickers or whatever else. But I'm wondering, I haven't read the book, and we have touched on it some so far on the call, but what recommendations do you have or ideas do you have to walk that fine line of helping them express their gender, which clearly she's ready to do without crossing the line.
Right. Well, so, you know, I think there's a lot of, just quickly, there's things like the Miyazaki films, like Totoro, My Neighbor Totoro, T-O-T-O-R-O, and Kiki's Delivery Service are beautiful. You'll love them, and she'll love them, and they have great female characters that are not at all spinachy, and those are wonderful things. There's a lot of great books. You know, again, I have this, if you go to my website, which is peggyornstein.com or cinderella8mydaughter.com and click on resources, your daughter is right in the heart of what a lot of these resources go right to, whether it's various books like Princess Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, or we did a great project at when she was a little bit older than that. I guess you'd be setting yourself up for a mess if you did it with a 3.5-year-old. But in frustration, unable to find clothes that weren't pink and sparkly, we spent a day, she and I, getting a stack of white T-shirts and dyeing them a bunch of different colors. And some of them we did tie-dye and some of them we didn't. And then she wore them to school. And in addition to having a rainbow instead of only being pink, she had this sort of pride of having made it herself. And that made it very cool to other little kids.
Uh-huh. And starting this, a new phase.
Yeah,
a fad.
Right. And this sort of sense of individuality that is taken away from them when they're all one big smush of pink. And it really taught her a great lesson about all of that. Plus, we had this wonderful time together as a family, though it did ruin my washing machine.
And I think, Avis, you know, the idea of reading, you know, looking through what you're going to get, and even if it's a hand-me-down of books, you know, taking a look and then being discriminating, and I think not being obsessed about, you know, countering that message. But it's so powerful, the commercialism, and I think to stick to quality and to keep modeling what you think is wonderful about her that isn't about how she looks. I think Peggy talks about that a lot in the book, that, you know, if you see a young girl what often is said to them is, oh, you're so cute. And, right. you know, it's all about their appearance. I love your earrings. Yeah. And, I, you know, I'm sort of guilty of that, too. I think we all are. Mm-hmm. And so it's really just opening up your eyes to that. And we will send you a copy of the book. Thank you so much for calling in.
Great. Thanks, Verna.
Really appreciate it. Let's take another call this morning. We have Valerie on the line from Soledad. Good morning, Valerie.
Good morning, Rona. Good morning, Peggy. Thank you for having me on the show today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So did you get a chance to read some of the book?
I did. And I have to tell you, Peggy, I was literally laughing out loud with, I mean, the ease of the book and some of the comments that you make. I mean, such a great book. I am also a elementary school counselor.
Oh, thank
for
you. Great.
Three elementary schools, and I have twin one-year-old daughters. So I'm very much into this. Okay, I don't want it to be frilly and princessy, but I want them to have, you know, like you said in Chapter 8, I want them to expect parity, but not really strive to be exactly like boys.
Right, exactly so. And I think that that's what's sort of different is that people, you know, there used to be this idea that somehow equality or parity meant valuing the things that are assigned to boys over the things that are assigned to girls. So, you know, what you did was you gave your daughter a truck or something, which is fine, you know, to give your daughter a truck. There's nothing wrong with giving your daughter a truck. But that's sort of, you have to be leery of giving her the message that the things that are associated with boys are superior to the things that are associated with girls. And that's a real challenge. Too, especially when the things that are associated with girls are getting so very skewed in one direction.
And what do you see, Valerie, as a counselor in schools? Do you want to add to your own observations here?
I have, you know, and it's interesting that, you know, even as young as third grade, well, actually we can see it in kindergarten, this relational aggression that comes from how do girls look? Well, is she wearing the cute pink tutu? Then she could be part of our group.
Right.
And so what I took away most from the book is, actually Nurse Rona just touched on it, was the compliments. And what I'm encouraging our teachers to do is kind of, you know, that 2-to-1 ratio, where if you're going to compliment them on their looks, great, but just say two other things about the way they are treating other people along with that.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. I did that. I tried that myself years ago when I did my first book, Schoolgirls, which was also about girls. And back then we were talking about all of these sorts of concerns about sexualization, about relational aggression, all of that among 12 and 13-year-olds. You know, now we're talking about 4-year-olds. But I thought, okay, I noticed that I was always bonding with the girls and greeting them by saying something about their looks. And I tried instead saying something about what I knew about them, you know, how was your math test or how'd the soccer game go or, you know, whatever. And it felt really unnatural, I have to say. It felt weird, especially if they were wearing something. And I'm not saying also, just like you know, that you should never compliment somebody
right.
for their looks. But if we could ratchet it down, that's exactly what I say. If you could ratchet it down to 1/3 of the things, you'd be doing girls a huge service at this point.
That's right. And I think what you also brought up about how girls are, the looks. I mean, Peggy does talk a lot also about the obsession with being thin, and she has a whole piece about, you know, a friend of her daughter's who is on the heavy side, who's, you know,
a naturally larger person.
A natural larger mm-hmm. person, and what that's going to be like for that girl, what it currently is, but what it's going to be, because we know how actually mean people could
right.
be when someone is considered overweight. So there's a lot to think about, and I'm so glad that you're there as a counselor in a
yeah.
school, and good luck with raising your twins.
Yeah. You know, I heard a really interesting thing in terms of relational aggression is what we call female bullying, basically, as opposed to just punching a kid in the nose or something. There was a piece of research I recently saw that said that girls who watch Hannah Montana bully other girls more than girls who do not watch it. And there's no effect like that in boys. It doesn't matter with boys.
Well, what they say is that the person who wants to be the popular one is more likely to bully than the popular one.
And
so if there are girls wanting to be like
right.
Hannah Montana, that might be part of why
Could
they
be.
Bully
yeah.
more.
And the girls that they target are the ones whose parents are encouraging them to be age appropriate. So I thought, well, what am I supposed to do with that information? Because I'm trying to, I want my daughter to be age appropriate and I don't want her to be bullied. And again, that shows some of the complexity that you want your daughter to march to her own drummer. You want her to be an individual. You don't want her to be obsessed with appearance and looks, but you also don't want her to be excluded. I mean, I think that that's what.
And you don't want to interfere all the time
yeah.
either. You want to also be able to let her find her way.
Right.
But how do you guide
right.
her?
Right. And so it's so easy I think, and that's why, you know, people always sometimes will say to me, well, you know, it's just the parents. And I think, you know, that is so easy. It's not. I mean, I think parents really try hard, but you're bombarded by these things, as are your girls. You know, it's tough.
It is. Valerie, thank you so much. We're going to take some more calls.
Okay, thank you.
Have a great day. Let's talk now with Kristen in Napa.
Good morning.
Hi, Kristen.
Hi.
Nice to hear from you.
Nice to hear from you guys. I'm loving this show. And Peggy, I really enjoyed your book. I did read it.
Oh, thank you.
Twice, actually.
Oh!
And I just had a question for you about, I hear what you're saying about, it's not just about the parents. But I think, you know, in the interest of this show, that's all we can really control.
Right.
You know,
well, that's true, too. Yeah.
But I was interested in knowing what you think about how this relates to moms specifically and their own self-esteem.
Mm.
I kind of see this, I do see it, it's just inundating the younger children. But I also see this obsession with housewives, Real Housewives
right.
of fill
yes.
in the zip code here, Paris Hilton, kind of this
right.
idea of women who, they're not stay-at-home moms. They are just housewives. They have someone else raising their children, cleaning their house.
They're princesses. They're grown-up princesses, aren't they?
Exactly. And your point in the book, which really kind of hit home, was like, it's not just that this is obnoxious. Princesses don't do anything. There's no creativity to it. It's just dressing up. It's just makeup and bling and,
yeah.
and nothing else. And I kind of feel like, wow, there are adults that are worshiping this too. And
oh, yeah.
I'm wondering what you think, how that's related. Do the divas create princesses, or do the princesses grow up to be divas, or... You know, what is that fantasy and obsession about being kept? Is that really just backlash of feminism, or?
Yeah, good question, Kristen.
I wish I could answer that.
It's a very, very profound question here.
Yeah. You know, I certainly see that. I mean, I think that we live in such a youth culture, and that. You know, little girl, we adults are, there's this concept of kids getting older, younger, which is that kids are somehow more sophisticated now, which is really not true, and that that products are pitched to older kids and they migrate downwards, and because little kids want to, you know, reach up and be cool like their older siblings. And for girls, being cool means looking hot. Simultaneously, adults are staying younger, older, because of Botox and, you know, makeup and everything. And so I keep thinking that if our kids are getting older, younger, and we're staying younger, older, that they're going to be older than us pretty soon. But that we're all going to be 21. But I think that that's kind of, there is this sort of
fear
of getting old and desire for little girls to act sophisticated through acting hot, and that those things do get very convoluted between, and the whole culture, I mean, that diva culture, I think that's what girls are. The princess is a mask for that. The princess it's not really princess. It's wicked stepsister is what it is. And I saw that when Daisy, my daughter, turned 7, so she's out of the princess phase, right? So, you know, the little girl princess phase. And she gets for her birthday a make-your-own messenger bag kit. And it had iron-on transfers of hearts and flowers and all those things you'd expect. But it also had iron-on transfers that said spoiled, brat, and pampered princess. And it occurred to me that there was a way that the ideas that we were trying to imbue girls with in the 1990s about girl power that were about self-reliance, self-determination, independence, following your own dreams, your potential, had been distorted by the marketplace, so that expressing your power and your confidence, that you did that through writing spoiled on your purse, and that it became about narcissism and materialism and shopping.
And, you know, I think also that parents live through their children. And
yeah.
I think that what Kristen is bringing up is that if I'm not feeling so wonderful in my own life, in my own self-esteem, my own marriage, whatever
it is. Or
my beauty is fading. Yeah. Then you live through your child, and when we all the pageant things that you talk about.
Right.
And then you push that on your child. To be that way, and I think we have to be really careful of
right.
that. Kristen, you brought up some great points, and we'll keep talking about it after the break. We're talking about the girly girl world and how we can embrace our children. I'd love to hear from a dad out there too. In a moment, we'll take your call.
Matters.
Helpful advice, inspiration, and resources for parents.
Get involved. Call 1-877-372-KIDS.
You can have the greatest influence on your child's language development. The most important thing you can do is talk to your baby, starting at birth and in any language. When you talk, make eye contact and allow time for your child to respond with a look, smile, or sound. Reading with your baby from the time she is born will also help her learn to talk. If your child doesn't say any words by 14 months or put two words together by 2 years, check with your health provider. Remember, have fun talking and reading with your baby. This message is brought to you by Every Child Counts, First 5, Alameda County.
It's never too early to prepare your child for the transition to kindergarten. For many children, the first day of school can be scary. Here are some tips to ease the transition. Read about school. Go to your local library and check out books about starting school. These books can show how other children work through their fears of going to a new classroom. Read these stories with your child and encourage questions. Talk about school. Conversations about school help your child know what to expect and ease fears. Talk about the classroom, teacher, and daily routine. Help build your child's confidence by listening to their fears or doubts. Visit the school. Before classes are in session, plan a fun outing to show your child the school grounds and answer their questions. Kindergarten registration has begun. Call your neighborhood school or district office to inquire about the registration process. For more information on programs for young children, contact your local Bay Area First 5 County Commission by visiting first5kids.org/bay. Brought to you by your local First 5.
This is Nurse Rona with news for parents, providers, and everyone who cares about kids. Childhood Matters is now podcasting. So many people have told me they love our show but can't listen on Sunday mornings. Now it's easy to get our shows on your iPod or MP3 player and take us with you. Sign up for podcasting today at childhoodmatters.org. And if you or someone you know speaks Spanish, click on the Nuestros Niños logo and learn about our sister show in Spanish with Doctora Marisol.
First 5 offers all new and expecting parents in California a free kit for new parents, available in English, Spanish, Korean, Vietnamese, Mandarin, and Cantonese. With a retail value of $75, First 5's kit for new parents is filled with information and gives parents all the tools they need to feel confident as they welcome a child into their lives. To order your free kit, call 1-800-543-7025. Brought to you by your local First 5.
You can have the greatest influence on your child's language development. The most important thing you can do is talk to your baby, starting at birth and in any language. When you talk, make eye contact and allow time for your child to respond with a look, smile, or sound. Reading with your baby from the time she is born will also help her learn to talk. If your child doesn't say any words by 14 months or put two words together by 2 years, check with your health provider. Remember, have fun talking and reading with your baby. This message is brought to you by Every Child Counts, First 5, Alameda County.
I think I'll color this man father.
Color him father.
I think I'll color him love.
Color him love.
Said I'm gonna color him father.
Color him father.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First 5.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
Well, today we're talking with Peggy Orenstein. She's the author of many books, most recently the New York Times bestseller Cinderella Ate My Daughter, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the New Girly Girl Culture. Give us a call. Tell us, is your daughter able to navigate the pressures from peers and the media to not only be pretty and pink? And what do you think is so appealing about all of this? We have a call now from, it's Dan Delgado from San Jose, an old friend. Hi, Dan.
Hi, good morning, Rona. How are you doing?
Great. So glad to hear from you.
Well, great. I'm just calling with a comment and a question.
Yeah.
So as a pediatrician, I see this all the time, and having a daughter, just being bombarded by all these messages, it's just kind of dismaying.
Yes.
But it's kind of hard to bring up with people. So the example I'll give is in daycare. The other day, they dressed her up as a princess.
Mm. And how old is she?
She's 14 months.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So talk about starting them off early.
Right.
So
The
question is, how do you bring this up without sounding overly protective, or even when you see it with friends?
Yeah.
So I'm a general pediatrician. How do you bring it up with patients?
Right. That's a hard one, Dan.
It is hard.
I really appreciate you asking that.
Yeah, it is hard. And, you know, it strikes me, though, listening, because isn't it amazing that you have to feel that way if you bring up something that's potentially damaging to your daughter, that you have to feel like you're the bad guy somehow? I mean, how has that happened? And like I said, it really, you know, for me, writing the book and as a parent, it was really hard. And writing the book, that was the biggest challenge, how to say it and not sound like, you know, the Grinch who stole girlhood. And the way that I did it in the book was by being, you know, as funny as possible and rolling my eyes. And, you know, I always say you have to fight fun with fun. So I think, you know, one way is to talk to the head of the daycare and talk to them about, in a kind of open, compassionate, funny or whatever way that you can, with giving them information, whether it's the book or offering, you know, whatever it is, or as a pediatrician.
Okay, so it could be something as simple as, Mary, my daughter does look good as a princess, doesn't she? But, you know, we're also trying to raise her to feel comfortable being a fireman or anything.
Right.
So I just wanted you to know that that's something that, you know, her mom and I are working on. So I just think sometimes I'd like her not to always be wearing a princess outfit. Something like that,
yeah.
Which doesn't sound so heavy.
Right. And, you know, if you have the opportunity to, as you're looking at preschools and such, to find a preschool that has thought about these issues, that helps. I mean, that helps a lot.
And I think as a pediatrician, it's tricky. You don't have a lot of time. You don't, you know, you're building relationship. Dan, you're often talking about, you know, body image with your patients. I know that you're so interested in that piece. So I think it's modeling, being able to look at a child and ask them about what they like at school or what they're doing, right. You know, outside of school. So a lot of it is modeling. And then perhaps having the book around. And
I was just going to say, what's in your waiting room?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, having you know, you have an opportunity as a pediatrician to have 5-year-old magazines in your waiting room and nobody cares, right? So you can choose, you can curate what's in there,
right.
and have some stuff out there that you've planted that maybe parents can look on in a kind of, you know, more natural.
We'll see if we have an extra copy, Dan, to send you also of the book.
That would be great.
Yeah.
So another question, is the book in Spanish?
Wow, interesting question.
So if you think that it's prevalent in just general American culture, this is hyped up to the extra extreme.
Yeah.
With many of my Latino patients.
Yeah.
You know, we have a wonderful Dr. Marisol around who certainly has worked on other books. Who knows, Dan, maybe this is a project you and Marisol can work on together.
Yeah.
But I think, Peggy, this is a really important what he's bringing up.
Yeah. That is important. The I have no control over things like translations I can suggest, but, you know, I'm just the writer. But I have been exploring the idea of writing a version of this for girls. And
mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, and what I'm finding with this book, because it's written in a really accessible, friendly way, that and because it has a pink and sparkly cover, which was supposed to be ironic, but that it attracts girls. And I'm finding that there's been an audience. I'm getting a lot of email from girls as young as 11, and certainly teenage girls and college-aged young women are grabbing it from their parents, from their mothers usually, and devouring it. So that's a really great place for older girls to start the conversation.
And Dan, I think it'd be really interesting too when you get a chance to talk to some other fathers about it. I would love to hear more conversation from fathers about their sense of this, because I think dads can really perpetuate this in girls, or also be one of those people who keep it in mind and be mindful of it. Thanks so much for your call this morning.
Thank you so much. Take care.
And come on our show soon, okay? Okay, Dan. Well, you know, we brought up the issue of sexuality and sexualization.
Yeah.
And before we run out of time, I'd like you to say something about this, because it is a piece in your book that's very important.
Yeah, it's really critical. It's really at the center of the discussion, which is the difference between those two, the difference between sexuality and sexualization, which as a parent was a really helpful dividing line for me. And also is the difference between being anti-sexualization and anti-sex, which gets you into this kind of repression, oppression thing, and being pro-sex, because sexuality is something that is cultivated from within, right? It's part of defining yourself from the inside out. It's being connected. It's understanding your own erotic feelings, your pleasure. It's empowering. It gives you the ability to say no, the wherewithal to say yes when you want to. It allows you to be self-determining in your sexuality. Sexualization is the opposite. It's performing. It's a performance of sexy of sexuality, a performance of sexiness. And when that is foisted on girls too young, that idea that, you know, how you're judged, that you that your central way of being of seeing yourself is as you appear or to, as you believe you appear to others.
And get feedback.
And getting feedback from that. And that appearance has to be very narrowly defined. As being hot or being pretty in a particular way, then you get disconnected from your own internal sense of self and your own internal developing feelings. And the risk of that is that that stays permanent. And what you see down the line is in talking to researchers on girls and sexual desire and sexuality that, you know, what one of the things that was said to me was increasingly when you ask girls to describe older girls, obviously, to describe an experience of sexual arousal, how it felt, they say how they feel it. They looked. Uh-huh. How they feel they looked. And this woman said to me, I have to tell girls, teenage girls, that looking good is not a feeling. And I think that is really at the
very
nub
powerful,
of it. That
yeah.
girls learn from the time they're asking, am I the fairest of them all, to define themselves from the outside in, to define themselves as they believe others see them, that that's the most important thing, rather than how they see themselves, how they, that looking good is a feeling, looking good is who you are. And everything in our culture is going to tell them that.
And, you know, I was reading about the pageants, you know, these preschoolers who are dressing up for pageants. And I found myself holding my breath a lot. And, you know, I've seen a little bit of that on TV and how horrifying that is. And I appreciated what you said is that that's an extreme.
Yes.
But that the same thing happens in
it's
lesser
a continuum.
Degrees. It's a continuum.
Yeah.
That we do at an early age encourage our kids to look older and look a certain way for the feedback. And then that's who they begin to think they are.
Right, right. And with the pageants, you know, if I just went down to Texas and attacked parents who put their girls in pageants, I don't think you would learn much. I wouldn't have learned much. And what I wanted to do was something else, which is to look at, you know, I think that attacking them and those shows, I think they're popular because they allow us to disconnect and distance ourselves and say, oh, well, those people, they're the ones who are terrible. And then you never examine
That's right.
yourself and what you're doing to your own daughter and what's happening to her. And so I think, you know, that's why I think those shows are becoming popular.
You know, and it was very, and for parents who are listening who have already raised their daughters or sons and, you know, thinking about this, I found that I also had to be very kind to myself and, you know, look back at some of my mistakes. You know, I could think of a few and say, yeah, it's all about awareness. It's about, you know, lifting the veil, thinking about this, not meaning that you're going to become this now overly indulgent,
right.
controlling parent.
Or perfect.
Or
goodness
perfect.
Knows.
And I appreciated
yeah.
your honesty in this. So as a final word, as we finish up here, I think what you say towards the end of the book is something about staying close, but not crowding them, and a few more pearls there. How would you like to end with a final word, Peggy?
Well, right. Oh, gosh, that gives me like five different directions to go. But I, you know, I actually wanted to say that I really believe that we have power as parents. And when I think about this, about starting this conversation, I think about the food movement and how 10 years ago, who knew what trans fat was, right? I mean,
right.
who knew, you know, who cared whether your chicken was in a cage or not, or even knew whether that, you know, I mean, maybe you still don't care, but at least you have awareness of what that means. And, you know, there were a couple books that came out that changed the conversation and that really parents stood up and said, I want my child eating healthier food.
Diet for a Small Planet.
all of that, you know, that, and now, you know, they're revamping the school lunch program. The McDonald's has had to put healthier choices on the menu. And I just feel like as parents, if we could make McDonald's blink, we can make Mattel blink. And
yeah.
we can get healthier options because it's the same language, right? You consume the media. And we want our daughters to have healthy choices.
Peggy Orenstein, thank you so much. I look forward to, you have an article today? And
I do, on the cover of the New York Times Sunday Magazine, yeah.
Okay, let's take a look at that, yeah. And I'm sure there'll be more books. Thank you to our team, Felsha Zuschlag and Lorenzo Plazzola, our producers, and my gratitude to my kids, Pei, Mara, Matt, and Karina. You teach me so much. This is Rona saying goodbye until next week, and remember, spend time with your child and take good care of yourself. Childhood matters. And so do you.
You've been listening to Childhood Matters.
Produced by Collins Media Services and presented by the nonprofit Interactive Parenting Media.
We are family. Get everybody a seat. Join us again for Childhood Matters. Find out more at childhoodmatters.org.